We're so grateful today for you to join us and share this part and this aspect of your life with all of us today.
Well, I'm thrilled to do it, both because I'm excited about it, but because also other people are excited about it. Maybe I could help.
You have given, and your family's given, over $300 million to health, justice, and wellness causes. Specifically, one that we put in the email that I know we'll want to hear about today is $50 million to New York Presbyterian to set up the Dalio Family Health Justice Institute. You've given over $180 million to financial inclusion and social entrepreneurship. That's over $30 million to Grameen, including big gifts in setting up Grameen America, and recently over $4 million in Connecticut alone. I want to come back to that one too, because it really hits on the idea of sustainability. And then in the last year, you've given over $37 million to pandemic relief alone. And that includes PPE, that includes support for research, but it also includes things like making sure the kids had laptops in the Connecticut schools and all the other work that your family does. So there are so many more things that I could list that are about the interest and work that you and your family has done. And I'd love to really start at the beginning and understand how you and Barbara and your family got started with Dalio Philanthropies.
Well, actually, our son Matt taught us about it in a sense. When he was 11, he went to China, lived in an all Chinese environment, went to an all Chinese school. And over the next few years, circumstances brought him into Chinese orphanages, and kids were dying in orphanages then, and lack of medical attention and so on, because they just didn't have the money. And so when he was a junior in high school, he was in a situation where he could see that he could make life and death decisions. For $500, he could give an operation that would save a child's life. And by coincidence, Oprah Winfrey heard about him, interviewed him on a show, and in his junior year, he gets bombarded at the same time as somebody there was in adopting orphans. So what he wanted to do before that, his philanthropic activities, were to try to just get money to save these kids. And he worked with a woman who he lived with at the time. She took the time off, a Chinese woman, wonderful woman. And anyway, long story short, I didn't know what a 501c3 was. I didn't know anything about this. And I was only just beginning to get enough money that I really felt that I could take care of my family well, but we were getting a little bit beyond that. But anyway, he raised $70,000. One thing led to another, and he undertook then the establishment of that. And I saw that, and he brought me into that world of meeting these people and being touched. And he brought his mother and his family members in. And that really got us started. What is a 501c3 and so on? Of course, over that period of time, I earned more and more money. And, you know, I was raised not having much money myself. And I really felt for a lot of these circumstances. So then I started to build it up. And as you say, then began a foundation, and with that foundation, then developed a team and done the things you're referring to.
Now, there's so much in there that I want to come back to, both about passion and about knowing what you don't know. But one of the first things that really resonated with me and with other people who, when we were sent out the invite for this talk, is how you go from a modest upbringing to having money, and when do you know it's time to start giving? How do you
know?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think each person has their own particular experiences, and I don't want to say that there's a right or wrong way or impose anything on any people. Sometimes children are raised where with very modest backgrounds, they're known, you know, just give 10% and so on. And so there isn't a point that one should say one has enough money. However, there's a natural point that I think probably all of us feel, or most of us feel, where we're realizing that you empathize with other people or other circumstances, and you realize that you can make a difference. And I think it germinates in a very gradual way, where, you know, when you walk around and it could be what you encounter in your various ways, and you do that. I would say, number one, the direct contact, the direct contact with people who are suffering and so on, and then realizing, you know, what you need is really very little to take care of yourself and your family in that scope. And so it makes such a difference. Like in my case, I had parents who cared about me. I went to a public school. I had enough food, and I had enough healthcare, and I came out to a world of equal opportunity. That's all anybody needs. And so many people don't have enough food. They don't have that kind of care. They are living in education systems. They can't get good healthcare and so on. If you're affected by that or whatever it is that affects you, it could be, taking care of animals, or it could be whatever it is that affects you. And you realize that dollar could make such a big difference relative to the almost decadence that one might feel by, in a sense, spending more and more on where it doesn't have as much benefit. That becomes the natural pull that begins you on a journey. If you feel it, you have to feel it. It can't be imposed. But when you have the exposures, you feel it. So I think it's kind of those types of experiences that make you make me not feel so good about myself, and make me feel much more joyous if I can provide that. I think that's that. And so you will find it as a continuous basis. You know, it will, you get started, you feel it, you might, the direct contact is key, and then you're on your journey. You will never know exactly the right amount. So you don't have to on day one. This is a journey. You will learn more about how to do it well. I mean, realize that there's a skill to it and there's a journey to it. And you'll learn more and more along the way. So that's okay. You don't have to make all your decisions of how much exactly you're going to give or when you're going to give it. You just need to go do it, experience it, and particularly experience, I think, the joys that come from your version of it.
Right. These are all these forks to explore. And so many of us have questions, but I want to go back to a Bill Gates for a second, because part of your history, and it was 2011, I think, that you and Barbara signed the Giving Pledge, where you agreed to give away at least half of your worth to charitable causes, as have many other people. Tell me about that decision. And why you did that then?
Well, like most people give the Giving Pledge, it's not a matter of the amount that they don't make the pledge because they're going to give away that amount of money. They know that they're going to give away that amount of money or more, and then they do it for another reason or other reasons. And I did it mostly, and not most of the people involved, because it puts me in it with other people who are much more experienced and can learn from. So, and you can pick up the phone with people who are in an analogous situation or might have a similar interest. And then, so it was really a terrific learning experience. I also thought, I have a lot of admiration for Bill Gates, and I think that arc to create some form of, you know, where people can say when you're the arc of not having much and then having it around is, I think, something that's good. But I mostly did it for the learning experience and to some extent the networking to people who have similar philanthropic interests.
Right. And a theme of finding people who are experts and knowing what you know, you know, knowing what you don't know, and finding people to help you experiment along the way.
Triangulation.
I've heard that before from you.
Yeah. This is the one thing, like I've been able to go into areas that I don't have any understanding about. And even the areas that I have lots of understanding about, whatever it is, philanthropic or career or oceans or whatever it is. And the, you know, one of the most important principles I have is to recognize that what you don't know is much greater than what you do know. And out there, there are people who know a lot, and that if you're trying to deal with the question of what you do, if you know how to triangulate well, you will have the best thinking available, and that is empowering. And that applies to philanthropy, or it applies to any other dimension of life.
And on that thread of not knowing, and knowing when somebody else is the expert, when you're working or your team is working very closely with people who are experts in that area, how do you navigate that specifically when it's on an issue? So you may be one of the best investors in the world, but you're not necessarily the best person at medical research, or you're not the best person at teaching a kid how to read. How do you navigate letting the leaders of these organizations lead versus try to control? How does that work?
Through questions. I mean, I just want to emphasize that I'm lucky to be able to speak to the most successful people in the world in almost any area. And I could say the most successful people in the world are more humble and are great at asking questions. And that's the process. So there's this process where you come in and you say, I'm a dumb shit. I don't know anything. You know what? I don't know. But you triangulate well where you're asking those questions, and you will see how they challenge each other's thinking. Because when you have something where they all line up about and it makes sense to you, that makes the, okay, that's good. I got it. And I'm learning. When that they're at odds, and then you hear the pros and cons of all of that, then that's fine. Success in life largely comes from really knowing who the best are and how to orchestrate and how to learn from them. It's a very quick learning process. So I could learn about a subject very, very, very quickly. I'm doing that with, like, how does the world order work, and so on, to be able to speak to, you know, the Henry Kissingers and all of that, and be able to ask. It's a fabulous way of learning a lot and getting the expertise, including delegating thinking that you would say they would know better than I would. But, you know, like I say, the who is more important than the what. You pick the right people, you triangulate with those who want to get help you get where you want to go, or thought partners, and will argue with each other about the best ways to do things, creates a great education and a great path.
And the who is more important than the what, and how do you also look at people's track records?
Oh, a lot. I mean, that it's the same as if I was a venture capital investor. The due diligence that's required. You know, fortunately, we have, a great team, but there's a list. It's just, it would be almost like if you're making a venture capital investor. What are their track records? Who are the references? Who are the other investors in them? What do they have to say about them? How do they operate? And then start off with a grant. A grant will be typically a multi-year grant at a certain measure. Then see how they're doing with the metrics, as well as getting to know them. And that evolves over a period of time. And you could say, you know, that one's a winner who delivers on the things that they say they're going to deliver on the metrics. So it's like that.
And what about the relationships you build? And, you know, there's always a meaningful work and meaningful relationship aspect that so parallels that I hear you saying the same themes and that apply to all these other lessons that we've learned over the years. But how does the relationship work with the people that you're working with?
It's so joyous. Like as I say, if you have meaningful work and meaningful relationships, so that you're dealing with people of good character and good capabilities. Not only are you producing good outcomes, but it's so joyous. It's so joyous. And it brings me into worlds like Mohammed Yunus is the man who received the Nobel Peace Prize. What an extraordinary man. He invented microfinance. He invented social enterprises. He received the Nobel Prize for that. He was given the Congressional Medal of Honor, and he was also, fortune determined him to be one of the five best entrepreneurs of our time because he created so many social enterprise businesses, which, in other words, they leave the money in the business to make it grow. And like to get to know him and to see his world and to take all of that is very, very exciting, very special, very caring. When you build mutual caring and a common mission, it's the best.
I want to turn to your the gift cards you gave out via Tis Best this year, which started with, I guess it's wrapped in redefining giving was the social media campaign also that you started. But I very personally remember how you've been trying to redefine Christmas or redefine the holiday season or redefine giving for as long as I've known you. So really one of the most important moments in my journey as thinking about these issues happened the first time I started, you know, in 2004, when you would give your employees and your friends, I'm sure, and all other people you cared about, a gift to the charity of our choice as your holiday gift to us this year. And I've said thank you then for the generosity, and it certainly affected the organization I picked. But the other thing that it really gave to me was the first time, I grew up with modest means myself, but the first time I had a check that big to give to anything, it was also an incredible sense of responsibility, because I actually had to be really thoughtful about that and deliberate and purposeful. And those same questions that I'm asking you now about how do you choose and how do you evaluate impact, you gave that gift to me, which then allows me to give that gift to my family and not just my brothers and sisters at the time, but now my own kids, who we think about, okay, what will Charlotte's charity be? And, you know, many people in this room have been interrupted on meetings when she'll come in and say she got her ASPCA membership card because she loves animals and is so proud of that. So anyway, this is not my talk, this is your talk, but I want to just really say thank you to that, because it was very, very defining in my life. And I think that really, we saw an example of that this year on social media when you gave 10,000 people, no strings attached, $100 gift cards to the charity of their choice, and the response of that and how impactful it was. And I just want to hear you speak to your decision to do that this year and the impact that it had for Tis Best.
Well, I think in total, we ended up giving something like 30,000 of various amounts, sometimes $50 and so on, and others joined in with me. But yeah, so back in the beginning, like, there is so much junk shopping at the holiday, and so many people who need things are left out of it. And so it occurred to me that for philanthropic people, I don't want to give it to somebody who doesn't appreciate it, but to give them a charity check to the place of their choice, not to give them on your behalf, I'm giving it to the place that I like, but to be able to do that just made so much more sense. And I thought I can maybe tilt that giving. So it was a joy. It became so wonderful because they loved it, like you did. And then I would hear their charities, and it gave us a dimension of our relationship that I hadn't known before. You like this for this reason. And it felt good, you know, like, okay, we're doing something. It felt less wasteful than buying that junky thing that, you know, you're wasting that doesn't have
the sweater. You always would talk about the sweater.
Yeah, that sweater that, you know, oh, and you know, do you know that the amount of money that is given in the holiday season for just candy is greater than the amounts of money that are given for the American Cancer Society, Habitat for Humanity, and American Heart Association combined annual budgets. So if we can tilt that just a little bit so that people realize this is a viable gift alternative, it's, by the way, very easy shopping. So I wanted to show everybody how they could do it this year. And it was fabulous because, you know, we first started with the 10,000 at 50, I think it was, and then we at $100. And then we did then a bunch. And what I was, it would go in hours. And the letters that I would get back, the communications that I would get back of what their experiences was. And Tis Best, who we worked to help set up to be able to do these things, this type of giving, so it's real easy, told me that their total amount of support, aside from what we did, tripled and so on. And so the wave of being able to do that, and who's to say it should go to mine, right? I get as much joy that it's going to yours and so on and hearing about it. And then I'm sharing the experience. So yeah, that's what I did. And I loved it. And a lot of people loved it. And I think it'll happen a lot more.
Well, I know I did. So thank personally, once again, thank you. And on that thread of the shared experience, can you talk about what this is like for you and your family? So when you and your family think about each other's passions or their own passions, or is there an example of one of these projects, maybe the Health Justice Initiative or the Health Justice Institute in New York Presbyterian that you worked on, where your whole family gets behind something? What's it like to do this together?
What we've created, first of all, giving should be an individual passion. And so what we do is we create it as it's a group activity, but I don't want to impose what's exciting to me on them. So what we do is we carve out, okay, what your allocations are. And as you imagine from Bridgewater, we have all sorts of protocols. Those who have gotten more educated and have more experience have more rights to do this and so on. And it's not imposed. Somebody, if that's not their thing, but all the family members in varying degrees have gotten into that. So they each have their own passions. And then we share them as activities. So like, I have one son who's mental health, bipolar. He's bipolar. And he went with bipolar and he's, fortunately, he's all great, but he went through that and that experience and the sharing of that, then that feeling of that is something that then we go to. We have another son, Matt, who educating people in the third world about bringing them connectivity and ed tech basically is his thing. And so we go to each other's things and we get excited about that. And then I have grandkids. And so the grandkids are young, but they get to be part of all of that. So I would say what we do is we share each other's passions, but it is individually driven. So and we sort of have a lead person to make sure that we don't intrude on somebody. Like my wife's particular passion in this is those who really are resource starved, particularly high school students getting through high school and into jobs. And so I get to tag along and I get to help, but it's really her domain. And that, so it's sort of a club. That's how it works.
I have just two more areas I really wanted to hit. One was about, you've talked a lot about sustainability. Sustainability is the concept of not just giving money and writing a check and that being the end of it, but anyway, I'll let you talk about sustainability, but, you know, can you speak to this sort of as a priority in your and your family's giving, where there's levels of it or order of preference given to how sustainable a cause or an organization is? Can you speak to that?
Yes. We're talking about really, what Robin's talking about is financial sustainability. And so we have sort of three tiers. When I was thinking, okay, as she mentioned, we have several billion dollars in this foundation. that money can be invested to produce a return, or it can also be invested in something that has a double bottom line, a social return, as well as a financial return. And then, as you might imagine, how my calculation works is I think, well, how much am I going to be better if I get the best return and then invest it in and give it away versus the it having a threat? So we tiered three types of investments and looking at them on the basis of stability. Those investments which are double bottom line investment, in which we can invest in that terrific thing that has a social as well as financial return, that comes back, that money comes back to the foundation and can continue to be given away. That's one tier. Unfortunately, there are not many of those, but there. So second tier is that where when we give the money, it becomes sustainable within the organization. A good example of that is microfinance through Grameen America. For every dollar I give, that there will be $12 in lending over the next 10 years, and it will go on and on because they have a mechanism by which the money gets returned and relent and returned and relent and so on. So that goes on and it's sustainable within that organization. Great. And the third type is that you spend the money on the things that need to be spent on. You know, we bought 60,000 computers for children who wouldn't have had computers for learning in Connecticut. There's no return on that directly. You know, there's a social return on that. That money won't come back. It won't be sustainable. But there's a lot of that. We still do the majority in category number three. But we try to work with organizations to try to find out how we can the, you know, how we give them a challenge. How can you make it sustainable? Because if philanthropy can be sustainable, which is, by the way, the remarkable discovery of Mohamed Yunus that gave him the Nobel Peace Prize. If there's sustainability in anything, then you have power. You don't use up those resources. So that's a consideration in tiering our giving.
What advice would you give to sort of the every person as it relates to how much is us giving $50 to a charity actually make a difference versus the size that a billionaire can do?
Oh, let me tell you that there's the financial difference it's going to make to others, and there's the difference it's going to make to you in your life. Okay, the financial difference to others. I could tell you right now, if you go on Donors Choose for Education, by way of example, and they specify the things that are needed in the classrooms. I mean, literally, in some cases, they're pencils, or there might be a book or a workbook. And you start to think, what does it matter for that child to have that workbook that that classroom wouldn't have? It's a disgrace in our society that that exists. But that you can give that and you can imagine that. Your $50 can have a big impact, even though you think it doesn't have much of a big impact. You almost took, you know, let's say half of your Starbucks coffee or something. Oh, it can have a big impact. And then I promise you that it will bring you joy. Okay. The more you learn about it, it'll bring you joy. So I think that's what I'm saying. It's proportionate. Okay. It's proportionate. Please don't wait. Probably your incremental rewards will be even greater.
That makes a lot of sense. My last question was a line from your book in the chapter on where you talk about your philanthropy and your family's, you know, you covered some of the things you talked about today. There was one line I wanted to ask you about where you said, the most important thing that we've learned is that there's no one right way to do philanthropy, though there are plenty of wrong ways. And so this wouldn't be a Bridgewater conversation if we didn't talk about the lessons learned or the mistakes or the wrong ways to do philanthropy that you've learned from. If you could talk about that.
Yeah, doing philanthropy well is just like doing anything well, because you encounter, naivete. How you can give money away wastefully. So, because it's not like a return on investment, you know, in a business, if you keep putting money in and it doesn't work, they will go broke. Not true for philanthropies. They can waste a lot of money if you put the money in and so on. So staying on top of it, it becomes an important thing. So being involved, understanding all the associated subject matter. Subject matter might be learning from others who are in those positions of need rather than having an opinion. Like one of the things in a classic mistake is the person who has an opinion and wants to then control a philanthropy. There are very, very many famous cases of that. What my wife did instead was, you know, learn from them. They're on the ground. They're in there. And you can hear. And so you make those types of understandings. You know, there are understanding who and the relationships, the size, how to have key performance indicators, you know, those kinds of things. How do you get the return? How do you measure return? All of those things, you know, and just many more, people who will themselves carelessly handle the philanthropic money, you know, skill levels. A lot of philanthropies might have well-intentioned, not effective deliverers of outcomes, mm-hmm. you know, so it's learning about all of that. Networking, you know, triangulation, the failure that comes from just going in and doing it, if you're doing it more in scale.
Right. You're still being an imperfectionist, where you're going to just get into it and make the mistakes and learn from it and reap the joy along the way.
Right. So that's great. Every year, like I said before on anything else in life, if you don't look back at yourself a year or two ago and think, boy, was I stupid, then you mustn't have learned much in the last year or two. So you will look back and you will say, I did, you know, boy, was I stupid. And then you build that expertise and then it improves the joy too.
Well, thank you, Ray. That is, that's great advice. And as expected, learned a lot through this conversation about both our own choices here, as well as, you know, what it is to be part of the Bridgewater experience for all these years together. So thank you, Ray.
And thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Robert. And I appreciate the other thing. I'm at a stage in my life, which I'm describing as the third stage of my life, in which the best thing I can do for anybody is to try to pass along those things that have been most beneficial to me. And you're enabling that. So it's a great joy for me to be here today and to have people of interest. And just like when you received that first check from me ages ago and it had an impact, you gathering all these people, maybe it'll have an impact of bringing them joy and helping them to contribute to, you know, a better world. So thank you.